Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 127 of HER, the podcast all about women, where we share the naked truth about her mind, her body, her life, and today, her fertility. This is going to be a really terrific podcast. Before we get started, just know that this episode of HER is made possible by our wonderful friends at Smarty Pants Women's Complete Vitamins. They're delicious once-a-day gummies that contain the complete vitamin, mineral, folate, and omega mix, customized just for women. Trust me, you won't forget to take them because they taste so great. To learn more, please go to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. And here's a quick reminder to hop on over to iTunes after our episode to rate and review this podcast because we love your feedback. All right, it's time for HER.
HER, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind, her body, her life. It's all about HER.
Here's a question for you. Should you get really a full fertility workup before you get pregnant? Could you get pregnant right now? Do you know the answer to that question? Well, of course, our go-to fertility expert is Dr. Kristen Bendixson, and she is a fertility specialist and assistant clinical professor at USC Fertility, a part of the Keck School of Medicine of the USC campus. She serves as a director of IVF at USC Fertility, as well as the director of the Fertility Diagnostic Testing Program. She's a smarty pants when it comes to fertility, and that's why Dr. Bendixson is going to give us the A to Z on this whole question. Could you get pregnant right now, and should you get fertility testing? Dr. Bendixson, welcome back to the HER podcast.
I'm happy to be here.
All right, so talk to us, right? Could you get pregnant now? How many women could answer that question?
I know.
Oh, my gosh.
And
who
you
knows?
Know what? There are lots of things that we can do that can test, that give us some idea of what's going on with a woman's ability to get pregnant. Yet there are actually some serious limitations on a few of those tests. You know, what was really interesting is that in this last year, there was a new study that came out in the Journal of the American Medical Association, JAMA. And it was actually done by one of our previous fellows here at USC, Dr. Ann Steiner. And she was trying to figure out kind of exactly what you were asking. Are there tests that you can do that tells a couple, all right, if you're going to try to get pregnant for the next 6 months, is it going to happen or not? All right. And that's, I think a lot of people, they would like to know that. If you could do a test that would tell you that and tell you if it's going to be easy or hard, that would be some information that you might want to know. And so we have these markers of what we call ovarian reserve, and we've been using them for a long time in the field of infertility. So there are two hormone markers, AMH and FSH, and there's also an ultrasound measurement that's called an antral follicle count, which is actually counting the number of these small little fluid-filled sacs in the ovary. And all of these tests are markers of what we consider ovarian reserve. And for patients that have infertility, these markers are super important. And they're really good at helping us figure out for infertile couples which fertility treatment will work best. Can you start with the easy stuff, or do you need to go directly to IVF? And in doing these tests, a lot of these markers have been studied extensively, and they do correlate with the success of these fertility treatments. But they haven't really been tested out in a population of patients that's not trying to get pregnant. And that's what Dr. Steiner and her collaborators wanted to do. And so they did this really cool study where they followed lots of women, and they looked at women who were just starting to try to have a baby. Either they hadn't started at all, or maybe they've been trying for a month. And they looked at actually only the blood test. So they didn't look at the ultrasound marker, but they looked at both FSH and AMH on these women. And when they and they followed them for several months, and they tracked who got pregnant. And what they found was that the FSH and AMH were not predictive of natural conception. And so a lot of people started scratching their heads at this, and like, how is this possible? Like, these are markers that, you know, fertility doctors use all the time that tell us, oh, you need to go to IVF or not. But how do they not tell a woman if she's going to be able to get pregnant on her own? And so I think that kind of what people forget about when a couple is trying to get pregnant on their own is that their ability to get pregnant is really largely dependent on the quality of that egg that's being released. So like when you're trying to get pregnant, you ovulate one egg each month. And so your ability to get pregnant is based on the quality of that egg. And if you're going to try for 6 months in a row, if the quality of eggs is better, then you're probably more likely to get pregnant than if the quality of the egg is not as good. And, you know, and of course, obviously there's other issues like tubal issues and sperm issues, but a woman's egg quality has a huge implication for how easy or difficult it is for a woman to get pregnant. And the quality of those eggs is based on a woman's age, all right? And so I think that what we're learning about these markers of ovarian reserve is that while they're very good markers of how well the ovaries are functioning and how well the ovaries respond to hormones and how many eggs you might get in an IVF cycle, they're not so good at telling us about the quality of the eggs. And then that what we know is that the age is the most important thing that really predicts the quality of that egg.
Wow. Okay. Now that age issue is a hot issue, as you're well aware. So again, what is, you know, kind of the green light, yellow zone and red zone on the age? Really
well,
important.
A woman, the quality of the eggs start changing a little bit at 27, slightly, and then start turning a little bit more at 30. At 35, that's really where things start changing more significantly. And for every woman, somewhere between kind of 37 on the early side, 39 on the later side, things are going to start significantly changing. And then for all women, really after the age of 40, things start kind of taking a nosedive, unfortunately, in terms of their fertility. And so, yeah, it's really interesting. And so these markers of ovarian reserve, one of the things that actually some people postulate and they think about is that maybe these markers of ovarian reserve kind of tell us the length of the reproductive window. So, you know, are your ovaries going to take that significant change when you're 37, or is it going to happen when you're 39? And it's possible that these markers, these hormone markers, AMH and FSH, are very predictive of that. So you have a 32-year-old, one who has really good markers of ovarian reserve and one who doesn't, their ability to get pregnant at 32 might be the same. But the woman who has really poor markers of ovarian reserve at an early age, maybe her reproductive lifespan or a window is shorter, and she's going to be that person who at 37, it's much harder to get pregnant.
Is it really important for a woman to get tested, you know, before they get pregnant? In other words, you know, if you're thinking about pregnancy and you want to know what that fertility window looks like, what if you find out that you're 30 and maybe you have a shorter window? I mean, don't you think that that would be of incredible help? Because I think a lot of women say, well, I'll just stretch it out till I get close to 40 because, hey, I should be fine. When we actually have ways of measuring that right now to be able to give them the reality blast of exactly how, you know, wide that window actually is.
Yes, and I think these tests can be really, really helpful if kind of used in an appropriate way and the patient gets proper counseling. I think that, one, if a woman has anything in her history that would suggest that she might have infertility issues, for example, if she has a sister who has infertility and is having to go through IVF, and I think it's always important to speak with your mom and ask your mom, like, when did she have kids? If she was having kids at 41 on her own, that has implications for you. Or did your mom go through menopause at 40? Did your mom have multiple miscarriages? All of those things are important. So if there's anything kind of, there's a red flag that's getting waved because of something in your family history, then it certainly probably would be important to get these tests done. for women who have really painful periods, that can be a sign of a disease called endometriosis. Endometriosis is very common, about 1 in 10 women have it, and endometriosis is oftentimes, although not all the time, can be associated with having a higher chance of having infertility. So if you have those kind of things that you think that could predispose you to having infertility, it probably might be a good idea to have these tests done. I think that sometimes the utility of having these tests done really depends on who you are having the test done with. Because if you have it done, for example, with a fertility specialist, and they take the time to explain to you what the tests really mean, and as part of going in and getting these tests done, you kind of sit down and make a plan with that fertility specialist about, okay, I want, you know, 5 kids. If I want 5 kids and my mom had menopause at 40 and I'm already 35, I really need to maybe start trying now, or I need to kind of lay out a plan of how I actually think this is feasible, because if your mom went through menopause at 40, you may go through menopause at 40. And so I think it's really important, because part of just kind of getting this test done is having that conversation with a doctor who can help you plan what you want to do. I mean, if you're young and your markers of ovarian reserve are not great, then I can't for sure tell you that, you know, when you're 39, it's going to be hard to get pregnant, but there's a distinct possibility. And so you have to decide what that means for you. Does that mean that you're going to freeze eggs now at 32, just in case that that's going to be a problem? Does it mean that you want to have, you know, 4 kids, so you actually have to start trying now, because, you know, there's a couple, there's a year or two interval in between having kids. You don't want to have them back to back. So I think that these tests can be very helpful for those reasons.
Well, how common is infertility? It seems like everyone and his brother is playing with IVF and really getting into it, whereas in the past it was so much less talked about. What are the numbers?
Well, we know that in general, that when couples start trying to have a baby, that 65 to 70% of couples will get pregnant in about 6 months. So in that first 6 month interval. And by a year, probably 80 to 85% of couples will be able to get pregnant. And so you're kind of left with those 15 to 20% of couples that are really struggling after a year. And after a year of trying, your chances of getting pregnant each month are only about 2 to 3%. They're pretty low. And so it doesn't mean that you won't get pregnant on your own if you continue trying, but the chances are just, they're lower.
What are the main reasons for infertility in that 15 to 20%?
You know, it's a mix of things. Ovulatory issues are a big one, like meaning that the woman is just not ovulating on a regular basis. Sperm issues, I mean, that's what 25% of the time it might be a sperm issue, so it might not even be on the female end. Ovarian reserve issues, things related to a woman's age that affects the egg quality, that certainly plays a big part. And oftentimes it's a combination of those things. It's not necessarily one thing. And about 20% of the time we don't find anything. Like everything seems okay and we don't really understand why the couple is not getting pregnant.
Can be really, really frustrating. I can only imagine.
It can.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, I mean, we do suspect of those couples that, like, where there doesn't seem to be anything wrong, that if you actually operated on them and looked for that disease called endometriosis, because unfortunately that's the only way you can diagnose endometriosis is by surgery, that probably a fair amount of them would have unrecognized endometriosis that just is not symptomatic. But it's still hard. I mean, it's very hard. I mean, it's hard to be infertile and be told that you can't get pregnant because your eggs are too old because you're 40. And it's really frustrating to not be able to get pregnant and not understand why. They're just different challenges, and they're both really hard and stressful for patients to go through.
Yeah. I can only imagine. You know, it's such an emotional journey to try to get pregnant and to really see this you know, to prohibition, let alone the whole issue of, yes, you become pregnant, but then you keep miscarrying. Other issues.
Exactly. Yeah, and it can be hard. And it takes a toll on the relationship. I think about, you know, if you're trying to get pregnant month after month after month, that's a lot of time where you're kind of having planned sex, right? And it kind of takes a lot of the joy and spontaneity out of things and out of the sex life. And that can be stressful for a couple. And it's stressful when it seems like all the things are not working because it's on the female end, and it's just one side of the couple that has the issue. Or if it's just a male factor, then it's really stressful for the guy, and then the female feels guilty. And so it can stir up all sorts of issues, no matter what the cause of fertility is.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, what's really great is that you've got this the diagnostic testing program for fertility. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, it's interesting. I'm wondering how many women out there are sitting down and really doing some, as it were, fertility planning. Now, rather than just sort of, you know, seeing a fertility expert when things aren't, you know, producing what you want, but instead actually doing some proactive planning. Do you see this as something that's a trend? Do you see it sticking if it is a trend?
I do. I mean, I think that some women are. I think that the fertility diagnostic testing is important because sometimes you can identify something that you think is really problematic. I feel like a lot of the value, at least in our program, is kind of what I know that I put into it and all the counseling and education that I give the patients that come through the program. And I do think that the family planning is so important. And there is such a lack of education in this country of how to go about having a baby and how things change as a woman ages. We spend so much time, you know, when you have kids, you worry about them when they're little because they have to understand sex and they have to understand puberty, all right? So you spend all this time talking to them about that, all right? And then, you know, they become teenagers and you have that second sex talk with them, because now you're just trying to make sure that they, you know, they don't get, if you have a son, you're trying to make sure that they don't get their girlfriends pregnant, right? You want to make sure that they use protection. But there is just this lack of teaching young adults about kind of reproduction. And I think that maybe it's because, you know, they're out of the home. They're not with their parents anymore. So their parents aren't giving them necessarily this information. It's not like it's routinely being taught in colleges. And to be perfectly honest, I teach at USC, and so I'm talking to undergraduates all the time about all of this stuff. And they're fascinated, but it's not as if the entire campus is clamoring to these classes. I mean, the women and men that are in these classes are oftentimes ones that are interested in medicine, and so they're interested in women's health. But I think that it's not on the radar of a lot of college students, and nor should it be, you know, what they want to do in terms of their family planning. And so there just isn't this one place where, you know, late 20-year-old men and women, or early 30-year-old men and women are so that they can kind of have this information provided for them about kind of saying, hey, you maybe need to think about this in terms of how many kids you want, and it's not going to be there forever. I think that there are some mixed signals in this country in terms of, you know, you see celebrities having babies at 49, you know, and I think a lot of people just have this perception that fertility treatments can conquer everything. So, you know, we can wait till we're 40 and IVF can fix it. And that's not the case. You know, we can do a lot.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. We talk about mental fitness, physical fitness, even fiscal fitness, you know, with regard mm-hmm. to financial planning. Get it? Financial planning. Yeah. But when it comes to family planning, and really sexual health fitness, or fertility fitness for that matter, mm-hmm. we really don't have that conversation. It's sort of a catch-as-catch-can. There's almost a stereotype that, you know, if you overthink this, you're kind of ruining everything. And that, you know, this is more of an emotional, romantic, you know, pleasurable thing. So, you know, quit screwing this up for us. And let's just sort of let it rip and whatever happens, happen. But really, at the end of the day, I don't see that there's an either or thing. I think you can have both if you could just, you know, add a little layer of responsibility and strategic planning. If you are going to plan on having a family, I think that that's important. That's why I think the work you're doing at USC is so terribly important. It's really raising the awareness of women that they should have this conversation, that they should know that they have choices here, and that they should also learn about their own, you know, fertility and reproductive health. I think that's just incredibly important, and that's one of the reasons why we love you so much, Dr. Bendixson, because you come and you help us understand, you know, the, you know, ups and downs and around and rounds about fertility. And women really need to hear this again and again until they really see how they can be apply this in their own life. So I want to thank you, Dr. Bendixson, once again for being on the Her podcast to help us understand literally the ins and outs and around on everything that has to do with fertility and why we need to understand how to be able to manage our reproductive health. Thank you so much for being on the Her podcast. And I want to make sure that everyone out there remembers to catch every episode of Her by just hitting subscribe on iTunes or on our show page at RadioMD.com. And then just take a moment and rate and review this podcast on iTunes, because we love to hear your feedback. I'm Dr. Pam Peek. Follow me on Twitter at PamPeekMD. And you can also check out our Her Show page at RadioMD.com for all of our past episodes. Thanks for listening, and stay well.